So, okay, well, last week, our daughter brought our grandson, John, who is 4, over to spend the day, and he came flying in the house as he usually does. He has no low speed to him, and he ran up to us and he said, "Grandma, Grandpa, guess what?" He said, "I woke up this morning, and you know what? I feel a lot more like 5 than 4. Well, I must have looked a little skeptical because he grabbed my hand and said, "Come on, Grandma, I'll show you." And I thought, where is he taking me? Ran into the bathroom, jumped up on a little vanity bench, stood in front of the mirror so he could see his whole body, put his arms out, and he said, "Now, Grandma, just look at me. Don't I look more 5 than 4? And you know what? He did. He did look more 5 than 4. You know, kids can see things sometimes that we adults miss. A lot of us know that. There's another story you may have heard about a woman who was driving her preschooler, another 4-year-old, to school one morning. And this woman happened to be a physician, and she had put her stethoscope in the back seat. So as they were driving along, she looked in the rearview mirror, and she saw her daughter playing with the stethoscope, being really intrigued by it. And so her heart started racing, and she thought to herself, "Oh my goodness, what if my daughter follows in my footsteps? What if she becomes a physician just like me?" But her thoughts were interrupted by a little voice in the back seat, and she looked again in the mirror. Her daughter had the stethoscope up to her mouth, and she said, "Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order, please?" Not quite what Mom had in mind. Not quite. But the question for us today is, for all of us is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we're not talking about physical growth here. We are talking about spiritual growth. We have been in a series studying metaphysical principles that can really improve our lives. And we have realized that metaphysicians explore great questions of being. Questions like, what is the nature of God? Will you read the rest of them with me when they appear on the screen? What is the nature of humankind? What is the relationship between humankind and God? And what is the purpose of our being? Now, Unity legend Eric Butterworth tells us that our lives should demonstrate, I guess Eric Butterworth is shooting on us, but I guess it's okay if you're Eric Butterworth, right? That our lives should demonstrate the results of the metaphysical system in terms of healthy-mindedness, wholeness, tranquility, prosperity, greater love in our relationships, and greater peace in the world. How many of us would like that? All of us. I would too, absolutely. So today, I thought we'd just take a little time out and revisit some of those metaphysical principles that we've been looking at with a special lens. And the lens is, how are we going to apply these to our lives? For most of us, growing in awareness of spiritual principles is not instantaneous. It's like our new railing project. It's a process, right? It doesn't happen all at once. Jesus addresses this All those questions that we looked at before, those important big questions, they cannot all be answered by Google, right? That's our usual go-to mechanism, but it doesn't always work. So here's the quote I was looking for. Jesus says in Mark 4:28, "The earth produces of itself, first the stalk, then the ear, and then the full grain in the ear." Now, this is Jesus talking about the orderly unfolding of our spiritual growth, because the stalk metaphysically represents when we begin to take spiritual ideas into our minds, whether it's by books, whether it's by lectures, whether it's by videos. We begin to take it in. And the ear represents the stage where we develop these ideas through inner practices. Practices like prayer and meditation, affirmations and denials, all of our wonderful tools that we use. And lastly, the full grain is when we manifest or actually bring forth those spiritual ideas. We cannot jump from the stalk to the end result of the corn overnight any more than we can jump from infancy to adulthood overnight. Well, darn. We're conditioned. We live in an instant waffle society, do we not? We're conditioned to want it now. But this is something that is a process. So our core value writing team, I can't believe now it's been 4 years ago, wrote this about spiritual growth. They said it is a lifelong process of bringing one's mind in harmony with the absolute goodness of God. The absolute goodness of God. So we know that as we begin to develop this spiritual understanding, this spiritual growth, one thing we come to understand is, first said actually, by French philosopher and Jesuit priest Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. And you all know this, I'd like you to read this with me also. And it is, we are not spiritual beings having a human experience. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Now that means many things, but among the things it means is that we realize that everything we see, everything we hear, everything we take in on this physical plane is not all there is. There's always a greater reality. And there's a little story that illustrates this beautifully, and I'm going to share it with you. It is from a book called Shadows of the Neanderthal. It's based on Plato's a much darker allegory, of the cave. And it goes like this. Once upon a time, there were five cave people. Their names were Unga, Bunga, Oogie, Googie, and Trevor. The five never left the cave. Day in and day out, they sat waiting for dead bugs and dried leaves to blow in for their food. They embraced the isolated lifestyle because they believed that the mouth of the cave was the edge of the universe. This situation provided some interesting existential reflections among the cave people, and here are a couple of them. Outside of cave is nothing. Go outside and poof, said Unga. No more Unga. And Bunga says, no, outside cave is big dragon. Dragons swallow Bunga whole. And one more. No, outside of cave is big mad god. Mad god stomp on Oogie and splat. Big, gross mess. So those are their existential reflections, okay? So despite their theological differences, the cave people were united on one point, that they should never, ever leave the cave. And they believed this so clearly that they actually wouldn't even face the mouth of the cave. They sat with their backs to the mouth and faced the wall. Now, this was very boring, a very boring lifestyle, plus, eventually, their necks were sunburned. So, sometimes animals would pass by, and of course they would see the shadows of the animals on the cave wall, but they only saw the shadows. They didn't see the beauty and majesty of the animals. So, for example, the hyena that you see here, when it came by, they would cower from its shadow, afraid. And when a butterfly flitted by outside, they would leap up in delight and try to chase and catch the butterfly. The cave people never realized how limited their understanding of the world was. For them, it seemed like truth with a little t, and they were satisfied. Now, the story takes a big shift when one day, Boogie wakes up, and he's just feeling restless. We've all been there, right? A lot of us have been there, or we wouldn't be here today. Boogie was feeling restless, and looking at those same old drab walls, he said to himself, Boogie, wonder what is outside cave. Well, the other cavemen couldn't believe he said that. But Boogie said, well, maybe more water, maybe more food, or maybe more room. They stared at Boogie in shock. They became very angry. They said, plenty of room here, plenty of food. Boogie said, but we only see what's inside the cave. What if there's a whole world outside the cave? And then they became very angry. Boogie, they said, Boogie say we wrong? Boogie lost mind. Boogie is delusional and narcissistic. Boogie want to ruin everything. This could be the end of us. At this point, the four began hurling rocks and clay bowls at Boogie to drive him out of the cave. Covering his head from the bruising objects and the stinging words, Boogie turned and faced the mouth of the cave for the very first time in his life. He ran away from his friends and out into the bright light of the world outside. So, we could say that the cave dwellers were actually victims of the strongest chains there are, the chains of their own deeply embedded beliefs. They absolutely stay in that cave, eating dried bugs and dried leaves, so convinced that those shadows are real that they can't even entertain the possibility of another reality. And what were those chains that held them there? What were they? Well, they must have had deeply embedded beliefs that there was nothing more, nothing better outside the cave, that the life they were living was their destiny. Their victim consciousness, remember we talked about that a few weeks ago? Their victim consciousness fueled fears of what dangers might be outside. Terrified, they became deeply immersed in the status quo, convincing themselves that this life was just okay, maybe all they deserved. Now, we might not live in a cave, but when we think we are only human, we too are bound by those chains of, really, we might call of our own creation. Like those misguided cave dwellers, we are victims of a distorted and incomplete perception of who we are. And when we turn our faces away from the shadows and into the light of truth, we realize that to be spiritual beings having a human experience means we have the unique ability to identify with the absolute realm at the same time we are participating in the relative realm. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, too. So what this means is the absolute realm, if you'll remember, is the realm of unchanging spiritual divine principle, the realm of divine mind. It is the sum total of all divine ideas in their purity and power. It is eternal. It's the eternal realm of infinite possibilities that we write about in our vision statement. In contrast, the relative realm is our constantly changing physical world. All these temporary outer appearances, and we might call that the realm of our senses. And so, really, in that physical realm, we can have different experiences. We can have sickness and health. We can have peace and chaos. We can have harmony and peace. Okay? Have you noticed that? Some things go awry in the relative realm. But here is the really good news. Any condition in the relative realm has the potential to be healed and transformed because we are never separate from our source, except where? Except in our own, right, so point of your heads, except in our own consciousness. That is absolutely, positively true. So, in our story, once Boogie gains the insight that there might be something better than his insect-eating, leaf-chewing, rock-sucking existence, right, he asks himself the profound question, what if what we are seeing and experiencing is not all that is? Now, if we are honest with one another, the doors are closed. No, we're not. We are audio taping, but we're not videotaping. But we won't share this part, right? If we're honest with ourselves, we know how difficult it can be to look beyond earthly appearances that seem so real. The diagnosis of self or others, a dwindling bank balance, a failing relationship. They are right in our face, and they seem so real. My husband, Bob, many of you know, has been going through a healing challenge, and recently he got a diagnosis that was not too encouraging, and we had to have a lot of tests run, and we waited weeks to first of all have this special PET scan taken, and then we waited 10 days for the results. And I'm going to be honest with you, there were days that I woke up, I prayed, I meditated, I was with it, I looked at him and I saw him whole, I saw him free, I saw him cured. And then there were other days that I sank into that fear and into that just worry about it. Everybody experience that? We all do that. So what are some things we can do when we face those life challenges? What are some things we can do to help us connect with all those divine ideas in the absolute realm? Well, for me, I immediately call my prayer partner when I began to sink. And I she helped me just get re-centered. Also, the chaplains I knew were all praying, right? I read the daily word. I looked at all the parts on healing. And I just closed my eyes and visualized. I just visualized how happy Bob and I would be when we got that good report. And guess what? We did get that good report. So thank you, God. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes. So the point is that all of us can find those tools that help us recenter. Sometimes, you know, we can pray with others like I did. We can call Silent Unity. You can use the You Pray app. We can meditate, walk a labyrinth, or listen to music that uplifts us. It is through these kind of practices that we are able to look beyond what's showing up in our lives to that greater good, because the greater good is always there. One of Jesus' most common teachings and many of his demonstrations were focused on looking beyond earthly situations to this greater reality. Reverend Michael Beckwith, another New Thought reverend that we have looked at a lot, he says Jesus was a master of spiritual discernment. That is, and I love his language here, the intuitive perception of the real. Isn't that beautiful? That's what we do. We have that intuition that there's more than what we're seeing. Jesus saw perfect spiritual wholeness when he told the blind to see and the lame to walk. Where others saw a lack of food on that mountaintop, what did Jesus see? He saw an abundance of what? Loaves and fishes, right? Remember that story? In two different places in the Bible. And when his dear friend Lazarus was lying seemingly lifeless before Jesus, he regenerated the life force in his friend. And in that case, Jesus did what he did many times. He gave thanks for the outcome before it was even manifest. Jesus was able to do these things because he realized his at-one-ment with God. He realized that he was not praying to some distant judgmental God to grant a favor or a miracle. He knew that as a spiritual being having a human experience, he could draw from absolute wholeness, absolute abundance, absolute love to bring those absolutes into the relative realm. And remember what Jesus told us? Greater works, these things that I do, you shall do. And what? Say it with me. Greater works than these you shall do. So the metaphysical truth is we are individualized expressions of God, created in the image and likeness of the divine. Charles Fillmore told us that we are on this earth in human form to be all that we can imagine God to be. And God is love, pure and unconditional. We are here to love, not to hate, not to resent, and not to judge. Anne Lamott wrote, some of you have probably seen this before, you can safely assume you've created God in your own image when it turns out that God hates all the same people you do. Funny, and actually, in lieu of what's happening in our world, not so funny, right? It's just that absence of love, that absence of realizing who and what people are. So, here's the thing. God can only be love. Hatred is from our human skins. And the ability to love in the New Testament, there are many, many names for love. Three big ones. When Jesus tells us, in today's daily word, we read it, to love our enemies, the word translated as love was not eros, meaning romantic love. He didn't mean that. It wasn't philios, meaning love of family and friends. It was agape. Agape, meaning unconditional Christ love. Jesus is explaining that to love our so-called enemies doesn't mean we have to have personal one-on-one affection with them. We may not even be seeing them. It doesn't mean that we have to approve of their behavior or condone wrongdoing. We simply have to behold the Christ in them and see them capable of good and deserving of our compassion. And here's something we all know. People will not always show us their best Christ selves, right? They won't. But we have very little control over that. What we have control over is what? Yeah, our own reaction. Everybody's pointing yourself. Our own reaction. Absolutely. We behold the Christ in human beings no matter what we see on the outer. Everything that happens to us and everything that happens around us is absolutely a call to be more of what we are here to be. A call to be love, a call to be peace, a call to be joy. I loved our beginning song. That was absolutely beautiful for that. So, as Jesus ends his teaching, this teaching about love your enemies as yourself, he ends it by saying, really addressing our divine nature, by saying, "Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now, I love, first of all, many of you know, the word perfect in the Greek was teleos, and it didn't mean free of error, it meant complete and whole. So what Jesus is saying is be complete, be whole, be what you really and truly are. And that's what it means to behold the Christ in one another. I love the version from The Message. The Message says, the modern version of the Bible, The Message. It says, in a word, what I'm saying is grow up. Your kingdom subjects, now live like it. Live out your God-created identity. So, excuse me. So, here's the thing. When we consciously, and it has to be conscious, it's not going to be automatic, when we consciously center ourselves in our true nature, we radiate a divine love so powerful that we are able to release human judgments about ourselves and others. This is one of my favorite examples of human judgment. It is so true. Human judgment is nothing more than looking to the world just through our own perspective. So here are two women. The woman in the bikini looks at the woman in the burqa and says, "Everything covered but her eyes. What a cruel, male-dominated culture." And the woman in the burqa looks at the woman in the bikini and says, "Nothing covered but her eyes. What a cruel, male-dominated culture." Right? It's all a matter of our perspective. It's all a matter of our perspective. So, John 7:24, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, Jesus says, "Do not judge by appearances." Use what kind of judgment? Right judgment. In right judgment, we are able to see past the shadows of our own perceived shortcomings, and we can see past our own negative perceptions of others. And we can behold the Christ in all, in ourselves and every single other person that we meet or haven't met. In the early Greek, the word behold meant to discern, to consider, to perceive as in a mirror, like my little almost five-year-old grandson perceived himself in a mirror. So when we see someone else, we look at them and we perceive the Christ, no matter what's going on in the outer. Charles Fillmore tells us, by beholding, we are transformed by perceiving the perfect pattern of the Christ. And whatever we behold, consistently we manifest. So we are here on this earth to perceive the Christ in everyone, not just those who live by us, not just those who vote like us, not just those who worship like us. We are here to perceive the Christ in everyone. Charles Fillmore tells us that in divine mind, love is the power that joins and binds us in divine harmony in the universe and everything in it. Love is an inner quality that sees good everywhere and in everyone. By refusing to see anything but good, love causes good to appear. I think I've told you before about my dear friend Sandy from West Virginia, who, when her husband does something that displeases her, she looks him in the eye and she says, "Paul, you have many fine qualities, but..." Right? And he says when he hears about his fine qualities, he leaves the room. Because he knows what's coming. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about looking past those and seeing strength and goodness in others. Because, as always, we have a choice. We can live like those cave dwellers, allowing our minds to be ruled by lies of unworthiness, limitation, fear, and human judgments. We can turn our backs to our original goodness and to our true purpose. We can stay focused. We can absolutely breathe and know that we are the Christ. Everyone else in the universe is the Christ. Michael Beckwith says, I love this quote, "There's a vibratory frequency with every turn of the earth. If you are the same as you were 360 days ago, you didn't stand still, you went backward." Right? Powerful quote. And then he ends it by saying, "You are constantly unfolding so that you can reveal the majesty and power of God." So we are here on this earth to live in the light as the light, seeing the innate goodness in all, seeing Godness in all. Moment by moment, we radiate light and love to everyone in a world which right now really seems to need it. We become that love of God on earth, and as Reverend Lee said last week, we absolutely not only can change and transform ourselves, but we, thought by thought, moment by moment, prayer by prayer, act by act, we can change the world. And so it is. Amen. So let's take a moment now just to absolutely affirm the great truth about the divine that makes all this possible. The truth that is being said in Unity churches all over the world. And so if you're here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. I invite us to say it together with power. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.